So, good morning. Good to see a few familiar faces already. It's really nice to be here. One more sound check. Is it okay at the back? Great. So again, if I fade off a little, please feel free to wave and I'll do my best to speak up. Okay. So just want to say how happy I am to be here with a group of people who are interested in cultivating these states of kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity, because that's a pretty rare, unusual opportunity. You know, even at the big meditation centers, there's not so much emphasis on these practices, so this is unusual. And in the world outside, extremely unusual, which may explain why the world is in the state it is. So how beautiful that we get to spend a whole weekend really focusing on our hearts and minds and cultivating these skillful qualities. So I just wanted to check. I know some of you couldn't be here for the retreat opening last night, just to get a sense of how many people were not here last night. Oh, wow, okay. So I'll do a bit of a recap of the talks from last night. And for those of you who were here, it'll be a refresh. So my name is Jill, and I started practicing meditation in Thailand in 1999. And since then, I've spent pretty much 15, 16 years living in meditation centers, working in meditation centers, volunteering in monasteries. And as Caroline said, I'm in the IMS Spirit Rock Teacher Training Program, which finishes this year. I also did the Community Dharma Leader Training, CDL4, out of Spirit Rock. And I was on staff at the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts for 7 years. And as I said last night, while I was there, I got to do some volunteer work in a men's prison, and I met with a group there every week for about 4 years, and I still go back and visit when I can. And it was really, I would say, those men that inspired me to get interested in these Brahma-Vihara practices, because I have to say it was a pretty serious contrast every Sunday to go from being in a center where everybody was maintaining the five precepts, living ethically, had that commitment to not harming, to go from that to the prison environment where many people, some people, were actively trying to break the precepts. And so you can imagine what a different kind of climate that set up. And having said that, for the men in the group, when I brought these practices in, there was a real hunger for them and a real dedication to cultivating kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And so those guys really inspired me because, as I said last night, I was something of a meta-skeptic to begin with. And when I saw how these guys responded and the results that they got, I thought, wow, if they can do it in this setting, what's my excuse, right? I'm living surrounded by generally pretty amazing people. They're not, and yet they're really able to do this practice. So that really inspired my interest in it. So before we go more into detail with these practices, I just wanted to say a little bit, zoom out and look at the bigger context. As I'm sure you all know, the overall goal of all Buddhist meditation practices really, it's freedom. It's freeing the heart and mind from the habits, the conditioning, the personality challenges that create suffering, stress, distress. And it's training ourselves to see those patterns and to know how to release them so that we can really live with more ease and happiness and peace of heart and mind. And I do use these words heart and mind together just because in the West we tend to have this split between head and heart. But these trainings really are very holistic. They include the emotions and the mind, the heart, the body. Very holistic path. So last night I talked about the theme of balance and how one metaphor for all of these trainings that we're doing is the two wings to awakening of wisdom and compassion. And from that metaphor, we have the sense that we need to develop the wisdom and the compassion equally if we're going to metaphorically fly. So we can see in our own practice at times how one of these tends to get developed more than the other. And because we're in the insight tradition, most common is for the wisdom side to be more developed than the compassion side. So this weekend we have a chance to sort of redress the balance if that's necessary. And wisdom here really means the ability to see clearly, to understand the truth on deeper and deeper levels. And compassion is a kind of a shorthand for all skillful qualities of heart and mind. So obviously kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity, the four Brahma Viharas we're exploring this weekend, but also things like generosity and gratitude and patience and courage and determination, all of these we can include under the umbrella of the compassion practices. So that's an overview of what we'll be doing this weekend, and it can be very helpful as we do this practice to set a strong container. You know, in New Zealand, where I grew up, the Maori culture, they have a beautiful tradition of weaving baskets to keep their treasures in their taonga, and these baskets are woven, and sometimes I feel like retreats are like each one of us is a strand, and together we're weaving this basket to keep our heart treasures in. And so part of the support for creating this container is what's called noble silence. And I understand that in this group you don't necessarily hold the whole day in silence, but I really encourage you to keep this hall silent, and even to beyond that, though there's a depth that comes from really giving yourself and others the gift of going inwards. Not in a cold, tight, disconnected way, but as an opportunity to befriend yourself, to get to know yourself better when our energy doesn't have to go outwards and we can give it 100% to ourselves. We have that chance to befriend ourselves, and then from that place of deeper self-befriendment, we can engage with others more fully after the retreat. So just an encouragement to experiment with that. In a similar way, the more you can maintain mindfulness throughout the day, keep your energy inwards, letting go of the devices. So giving yourself the gift of a digital detox for these 8 hours, and just notice what a difference that makes when the energy isn't being pulled outwards, distracted and scattered. And because we are all in this together, the more we can do this as a group, the deeper we can collectively have our practice go. So encouragement to hold this as a retreat, moving between sitting and walking, and really maintaining continuity of mindfulness through the whole day as best you can. And then the second support is a commitment to non-harming. People who've been on retreat know that we formally take the precepts, the commitment to not kill, to not steal, to not act out inappropriately on our sexuality, to not lie, and to not use intoxicants. So just having that inner commitment to non-harming, which is the basic expression of kindness that we're practicing here this weekend. So we have these supports of the noble silence, of the commitment to non-harming, and the support of each other and the mindfulness to really create this powerful container for us to explore the treasures of the heart this weekend. So, moving now to the actual Brahma Vihara practices. As I said last night, the word Brahma Vihara, the phrase in English, is difficult to translate, but it basically usually means something like heavenly abodes or divine abidings or sublime states or the four immeasurables. And I understand that the Buddha called these the Brahmaviharas because the Brahmin religion at that time had Brahma as a god. And the idea, there were practices that the Brahmins did that took you to live with Brahma in the future, far off in the future. If you did all these practices, you would at some point get to live with Brahma, this Brahmavihara, divine abode. And the Buddha took that teaching and a little bit subverted it and said, you don't have to wait for the future. If you practice kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity right here and now, you will be living with Brahma, because these are sublime states of heart and mind. They feel good. So the encouragement is, if we do these practices now, we get to taste a little bit of sublimity, you know what I mean, heaven. Yeah. So that's the invitation and the promise of these practices, that cultivating kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity brings us into very beautiful states of heart and mind. And this is a very different form of happiness than what the conventional world thinks of as being happiness. You know, most people in ordinary life tend to look for happiness in all the wrong places, tending to look outside of themselves and really trying to control the external world and manipulate conditions to come together to give us some kind of satisfaction. But as I'm sure all of you know, or you wouldn't be here, that is at best partially successful, temporarily successful. And you might see that in your own lives if you think back on the different stages of your life. You know, maybe when you were in high school, you thought, if I could just finish high school, then I'll be happy. And you finished high school and you thought, well, if I could just get through college and get a job, then I'll be happy. And you got the job. Well, if I could just get a better job, then I'll be happy. If I could just get a relationship, then I'll be happy. And then you get a relationship. If I could just get a better relationship, then I'll be happy. If I could just retire, and there's always something out there that's going to make us happy. A more beautiful home, or an exotic vacation, or a sabbatical, or a dream retirement, whatever it might be. And it takes so much energy to try and pull all that together. And when we get there, well, it's the next thing that's going to make us happy. So if we have unless we have some kind of inner training, we really are at the mercy of conditions out there being a certain way for our happiness. But the beauty of these Brahmavihara trainings is that we can train the heart and mind to know some basic ease and peace, happiness, regardless of what's happening out there. We can train ourselves to speak and act in ways that bring more happiness. But in order to do that, we need to know what's going on in the mind. So some of you are probably familiar with the opening lines of the Dhammapada, the collection of short sayings of the Buddha. This is one translation that I particularly like. It says, "We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind, and trouble will follow you, as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow, unshakable." So I find that a very powerful statement. We are what we think. With our thoughts, we make the world. So if we want more happiness, we really need to train our hearts and minds to incline in that direction. So metta is the foundation of these four practices. And as I said last night, I used this image of a diamond shape, metta being at the bottom point of the diamond. It's the foundation. And when this kindness turns towards difficulty, it becomes compassion. So that's on one of the side points of the diamond. In the same way, when metta, kindness, turns towards what's going well, towards happiness, it becomes joy. So compassion and joy are at the two side points of the diamond. And then when compassion and joy are perfectly balanced, we have equanimity at the top. Equanimity being that evenness of mind that's not grasping after pleasant or pushing away unpleasant, but just resting perfectly at ease. So over the arc of this weekend, we're going to spend this morning cultivating metta. The afternoon will be compassion. Tomorrow morning, joy. And then tomorrow afternoon, equanimity. So there's a lot of ground to cover, but don't worry. I really encourage you to find your own rhythm with it, your own way into it. We'll alternate sitting and walking. There'll be plenty of silence to digest the guided meditations. And I really encourage you to, one of the things I appreciate about these practices is that they can be very creative. Unlike some forms of concentration or mindfulness, you can't, I don't think, accidentally develop too much metta. Hasn't happened so far. So you can really play with it and be creative and find what works for you. I'm going to be offering you a whole range of techniques because different minds respond in different ways. So feel free to play, to experiment, to enjoy this weekend and find your own way into it. So metta, as I said last night, is usually translated as loving kindness. But that's not such a helpful translation because the word loving can really get in the way. And actually, goodwill or benevolence or just simple kindness are probably more accurate translation. And we can begin to practice it right now. It doesn't have to be this reciting of phrases that has become the most common method of practicing metta. So even as you sit here right now, you might notice what's happening in the body. It's taking a moment to register any physical sensations you're aware of right now, pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. Can you meet them with this basic attitude of goodwill, kindness, acceptance? And in the same way, noticing what's happening in the heart and the mind. Any thoughts or emotions or moods or mind states. Perhaps there's a feeling of ease or interest or dullness or sleepiness, whatever it might be. Seeing if you can meet that with metta, with kindness. So as I said earlier, and last night, in the original teachings of the Buddha, the instructions were simply to, quote, abide with one's heart filled with metta and then radiate that energy out in the four compass directions and then above and below and all around until it encompasses the entire world. That was it. Okay, one, two, three, go. Radiate metta around the whole world. And perhaps, I don't know about you, but for me, I don't always abide with my heart imbued with loving kindness. So later on in the tradition, after the Buddha's lifetime, in the Visuddhimagga, these practices became codified and became that they were offered as using reciting phrases to cultivate this attitude of goodwill. And that's the way metta and the other Brahma Viharas are usually taught today, where we recite sets of phrases towards different categories of people. Ourselves, a good friend, a neutral person, difficult person, and then out to include all beings everywhere. That's the traditional way of doing it. So with the first method, what I'm calling the radiating energy method, the benefit is that it's simple, it's direct, you don't have to think too much, you it's kinesthetic. We can tune into the body and feel the energy in the body and then perhaps visualize radiating it out. That works really well for some people. For others, it helps to have the phrases to sort of hold on to stabilize and steady the mind. It helps to bring in actual living people to get a sense of that connection. So for some people, that works really well. Over the course of this weekend, I'll be blending both of those different styles, and you can just find for yourself what works for you. So I'd like to offer some guided meditation now to begin with, and we'll be doing it the traditional way with phrases for the category of the person known as the benefactor. So in all of these practices, I call it the path of least resistance. So we're starting with where the quality comes most easily and then gradually building that metta muscle until we can include more and more challenging types of people. So traditionally we start with ourselves because that was assumed to be easiest, but for many people that's not actually true. So this morning I'd like to start with the benefactor. So the benefactor is any person or being. When you think of them, there's a natural sense of warmth, of ease, perhaps a smile when you remember them. Traditionally, it's someone who's supported you in some way, perhaps being a mentor, or could be a teacher or a spiritual teacher, high school teacher, mentor, could be a relative, an aunt or uncle or grandparent, could be a small child, a grandchild or a niece or nephew, could be a pet, an animal. Anywhere where you feel a sense of affinity and connection, you can think of that being as your benefactor. Any questions about that before we give it a go? Okay.